Hello, we're at episode 176 of the Chattering Classes. I'm talking to Amber Quigley today. I spoke to her episode 137, A Step Away from Ditzy. You can listen to that, go back, and then hear how she's doing. Probably 15 months later, having been a teacher for a little bit longer. I actually taught Amber when she was a student from year 7 to year 10. And 10 years later, she is now an art teacher at the same school that she went to and that I taught at. But anyway, let's get to it. All right, I am talking to Amber again. She's back from episode 130 something.
Yep, one of those numbers.
One of those numbers, and last time I spoke to you, you've been teaching for 12 months,
mm-hmm.
and now it's how many months? 20, 30?
Well, no. It's 2 years and 2 terms.
Right.
Pretty much, so.
And Amber bought pastries to my house, so well done her. My children think you're great.
I hope they do. I buy affection in all ways.
Yeah. I mean, that's what you got to do. No, you're an art teacher, art/English.
Yep. And recently going back into English, I found out this morning.
Oh, okay. Yes, yes. As always, a few days to go at the end, before the end of the holidays,
mm-hmm.
where you get an email or a message that says, oh, by the way, you've got another class.
Yep.
Enjoy.
It actually does sound pretty good. I have missed teaching English.
What year group?
Year 8.
Right. Do you have favourite year groups? Or is art?
I think I prefer teaching arts to 9-10s because they get a bit more independent and have their own artistic values.
They sort of it's an elective too, so they all of them want to do it.
They choose to be there. And they already have a basis in the theory. Like you can say the word medium and they know what you mean, or technique and they know what you mean. And I really enjoy teaching year 7s in art for the opposite reason, because they're so fresh and you can just sort of say things and they follow you like a god.
Yep.
So year 8s are one of my least favorite to teach art, because they're in that teenager middle ground between not wanting to do anything that would make them an outsider or different.
Yeah.
But wanting to do art because it's outside and different.
Yeah, just being in the class is the difference, but the actual being vulnerable or...
Yep.
Yeah, it's the same. English is very similar.
Like, it is.
It's how about you write what you actually feel and... Let me just check what everyone else feels, and then I'll write about that.
Yep, or I'll make some toilet joke up about a superhero.
Yeah.
It's the other side of things.
Ah, you've read Captain Poop as well. Yeah, there's a lot of that. I have a question to start off from our good friend Nick Maniatis, the producer of the show, who is working with you.
Yep.
And he wants to know, how did you get a start as a ceramic artist?
Ooh, okay. I've been doing ceramics... on and off since I was 6. So when I was in kindergarten, my brother was doing some sort of physiotherapy and I felt left out. So I was bribed with some clay. And that turned into doing some holiday programs. And then, because ceramics is a really expensive hobby. Like as far as arts goes, ceramics is probably just below goldsmithing and glass blowing. It can be very expensive if you let it. So I had a bit of a break from doing it officially as any sort of program for a good few years, but I still did like polymer clay and made horrendous earrings like everyone else went through that phase.
Yeah.
But I studied ceramics. Like I would in my spare time be the nerdiest person possible, looking into ceramic methods and learning about different countries' versions of ceramics. I got really into Japanese pottery for a while, because I was doing Japanese class in school. And when I was a teenager, the art teacher at the school, we didn't have an arts program, but he had a ceramics experience, so he didn't have the ability to teach it, but to a few students that would like come and bother him at recess and lunch, sometimes he would throw me some clay that he would get fired by a friend's kiln, and he connected my parents with a couple of cheaper and community-run classes that I could do on weekends and school holidays. And so when I got my first job, that's what my money went towards. My whole paycheck was doing these pottery classes for a little while. And around partway through uni, I needed a big stress relief and I got a job at the art school as an art model. And from there, I could just sort of have access to the studio even if I wasn't in classes. And I got, in my free time, the ability, and I built up enough trust with a few lecturers where I could do some ceramics at the school even though I wasn't part of the class, if they had a spare spot. And in lockdown, I was introduced from a friend of a friend who has a studio to someone looking to run classes, and so I became part of her classes, except it turned out I was more advanced than a lot of her other students, which is pretty cool, and she just sort of lets me hang out in her studio now, existing, and there's a class essentially that is just people that are advanced enough that she just likes to hang out with them, and we all hang out together. So I've sort of built my own space in ceramics. And from there, because as an art teacher, you have to have experience in all the basic mediums. They don't actually give you the opportunity to do that as a teaching student.
Yeah.
They just expect you to know the things. So ceramics was the main thing that wasn't being taught to me as a student. So I was lucky I had that background. Because when I needed to know things like how to run a kiln, how to mix your own glaze, the composite materials of the different clays and their firing temperatures, I already had that community that I could fall back on, and that became my official, unofficial training.
So they would have expected you, even without having any training, to fire up the kiln and blow all the pots apart.
There's not a lot of schools in Canberra that still have pottery programs, or at least not to a full degree, but they still expect you to run a class, even if it's just air dry clay.
Yeah.
It's still an expected medium. And at a high school level, the expectation is that students are making functional pieces rather than just like fun little monsters, which is a more primary school expectation.
Yeah.
So if I ended up at a school with a pottery program or with an interest in doing pottery, which is my favorite medium to work with, I'd need to be able to do it. And so you sort of, and it's not even an official PL that you can get in how to run a kiln, or there's not an official PL in how to do oil paints for art teachers. It's all just about the community you have and finding those skills in your spare time. So a lot of it I found is self-taught.
Wow.
Which is interesting.
Yeah, and I guess put some weird expectations on the teaching of it, or having a variety of, I guess it's the same as a lot of things of like what you are good at versus what you're passionate in. So
it's similar in like a lot of electives and a lot of teachers, you'll have a favorite subject within your area that you like to teach, but you still teach the bulk of it.
Yeah. Yeah, you have to teach all of it, but there's certain areas you're like, cool, we're doing this again. Yeah, drama was a bit like that. You're like, oh, I'm going to teach this. Oh, it's boring. Can't we just do silly things?
You just wanted to do slapstick all day.
Let's do fighting. Can we do, can I bring sticks in? Yeah. Work out how to hit people without hitting them. So I want to go back. You said something right at the start, which was that your brother was doing physiotherapy and you felt left out.
Yes.
So why, when you were about six, so what was the physiotherapy your brother was doing?
Oh, so my brother has a disability, and I had my own health issues when I was younger that had its own therapy, but there was a more significant amount of time spent looking after him that to a kid just looks like parents picking favorites.
It's unfair,
He gets his own thing. So I was feeling left out, and I would either go with them and sit in a waiting room, or I'd go off with a friend, or, but there's only so many times that can happen. So there was, for regular stuff, there was like an art club, a come and try session that the preschool and the primary school did.
Yeah.
That was sort of an after school care. And I ended up doing a lot of that. And it was a lot of just hand building with clay for a bit. And it just built from there.
So what do you reckon, what, it might be a bit hard to answer, but at what age do you start making the distinction between like attention given versus favoritism? You know what I mean? It's a very, like, students still in high school still have that, like the students you spend the most time with, they're clearly your favorite, not the ones who need the most support.
I think it, part of it comes from the intention, the visual intention of the time being spent, and that's all based on the audience, and kids are always narcissistic and selfish, and it's a natural point of growing up.
Yeah.
So if you see someone that you want attention from giving someone else attention, your automatic reaction is going to be, they don't like me, not that someone else needs help. So and it's different, like as a glass child, so someone who's a sibling of someone with a severe disability, you grow up with the acknowledgement being that the attention is always at a baseline going to someone else.
Yeah.
So that can go one of two ways. One, you can sort of be immune to it and be like fine and maturing normally. And the other one is you start seeking attention from everyone else.
I think that's unnatural. Don't you think that would be unnatural for like a 6-year old to be like, I understand what's going on here?
I've met some weird 6-year olds.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I don't know if they were like secretly holding the trauma within them.
Right.
But in my time surveying them, they seemed okay. No. Right. I think it's different for everyone, but a lot of it is about if you want their attention, the baseline. Like, yeah. I remember I wanted my mum's attention more than my dad's, because when my dad gave me attention, it was always silly playing games. It wasn't like serious conversations, which like 6-year olds don't often want serious conversations, but they do want to feel like they're more grown up than they are.
Mm-hmm.
And because my mum was the one that would have serious conversations, like she would teach me to cook, or we would go for walks and talk about like deep thoughts that 6-year olds have, like,
yeah,
are cats or dogs better?
Yeah.
But she would have those conversations and debates with me. So when she was the one taking my brother to appointments, I wanted her attention more.
Yeah.
But she really valued art. So when she pushed me towards art and was like, you should try this, or you should read this book, or I got this for you, that felt like getting the attention from her, even if she wasn't physically present.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I think that's where it comes into play, is the kind of attention that you want and the intention you feel with that attention.
Right. Hmm.
I don't know.
So your brother and yourself, you are twins.
Yes.
And as far as the twins that I've taught in my life, you are the least alike twins.
Yep.
In every way.
Really?
I would say so, yes. I mean, definitely physical.
Yep.
No one would pick you for twins ever.
No one pick us for siblings.
No one pick you for siblings. In fact, I'm sure you remember this because it was hilarious.
Yep.
I don't know what year you were in, but there were some girls who fancied your brother, and they were in a year below or a couple of years below.
Yeah.
And they were not impressed with you.
They were not.
Coming in and taking their man.
No, and I used to always hanging around him.
Oh, really?
I would play it up.
Oh, my God.
There was one girl who would just be horrible to me, and I thought she was so funny. She was 2 years younger than us, and she was in year 7 and obsessed with this year 9 boy who was my brother.
Yeah.
And we had a group of friends that we'd known since kindergarten. Most of them in our year group, but some of them in the year below us that had joined us and were now year 8s. And we would all giggle about it behind her back when she'd say these mean things out loud. And small enough school, my spies would hear it.
Yeah,
and we'd all have a little joke about it. But one day she followed me into the bathroom and threatened me and like poured milk down my shirt like it was an episode of Glee or something. And I just was like, okay. And I went back and I made my brother take his jumper off so I could switch it for my shirt and just moved on with my life. And she was so upset by it that she tried to call me out in the middle of the canteen.
And well, what does that mean though for her?
She was like, you're a boy stealing bitch.
You're a boy stealing bitch.
And I was like, he doesn't know your name. And also, this is not what you think. And a girl named...
This is Glee. Like, all of this is Glee, right?
It's
all
Glee. It felt like Glee. And like, my year group at the time was only like 50 kids, and her year group was smaller than that. So this school had like 200 kids at one point.
I
feel like everyone was in the canteen.
Mm-hmm.
It was anyone that could be. So she like gathered all her little year 7 friends together, and they were all standing next to me as I was like hanging out with my brother and our friends in his jumper.
Yeah.
And she goes, you're such a boy stealing bitch. Like, you're just trying to get his attention. You don't even want him. You're mean to him all the time.
Far out. Like, so
that's
funny.
My job. And then this one girl who we'd known in primary school like stood up and was like, that's his fucking sister. And then next day she brought me like chocolates and was like, I think your hair is so pretty do your makeup so well.
Well played. So subtle. Oh my God, that's so hilarious. I would have liked to have, like I said, if it's the episode of Glee, to see her face or her what happened in her brain.
Oh, I wish there was a photo.
At that moment. It's so weird. But even like just to be in year 7 and be like, that girl who keeps talking to the boy I like, we all hate her.
She like touches him all the time.
Yeah, she's always punching him.
Hitting him.
Yeah, punching him,
hitting
him.
I would like verbally harass him at any given opportunity.
They were probably in year 7 going, oh, okay, so if you like a boy, you hit him.
And he tugs on your pigtails.
He hits you back and then he lends you his jumper. That's so sweet. All right,
and at one
probably
point the rumour was going that I was dating about 6 guys because I had male friends and I would hit them all equally.
It was a very close, you had a very close year group in that way. Mm. It was very, I was your year advisor and the year group under you. It's a completely different group.
Very different energies.
Your group was more I was going to say homogenous, but that's not the right word. But you all mixed in pretty well.
There wasn't any separate cliques. There was like friendship groups, but everyone just sort of hung out together.
And certainly by the end of like, even by year 9 and year 10, that had really settled and the bullying really dropped off and the acceptance, which is that maturity, right? Of like, who do we like? Doesn't matter. Mm. I can tolerate. It's for tolerating.
Like we're all with everyone. I don't think there was any...
There were a couple that were like hard to tolerate, but...
Yeah. There wasn't any targeted bullying, though, especially by 9, 10. We'd all just sort of, like, given up. We would harass younger years if anyone tried to break into
That made me so proud. Look at the way they're maturing now. They're harassing the people younger than them.
There was a bunch of kids that were trying to join, like, the handball tournaments, and we'd tell them to fuck off. Like,
can't be messing with the year 10's handball. And then, the year below you was completely opposite. They were forever cliques and forever selling their friends out to be with in a relationship with someone, or they'd find out their friend likes someone and they'd immediately attach themselves. It was forever like that and it never stopped. And even that year group below you, though, as their year advisor for 4 years, the only time where it wasn't like that was literally the last week. Like the formal and the last day were the only real 2 days where it was like really nice. The rest of it was not.
The last 2 years I've been teaching, the caddy year group got worse.
Well, that was a surprise. I wasn't really looking forward to it because they were, but they just sort of finally, it was like they all like got to the end and breathed out like, oh, we can relax.
I'm not going
to
see any of these people.
Yeah. Or like, when I see the next,
it's 2,000 other students between us.
So I don't know. I really don't know what that was, especially compared to your year group. I don't know. It is unusual, and the more you teach, the more you see it. Like, oh, this year group coming through. You get warnings from the primary school. Like, the year group coming through in however many years, they're really tough. Mm. It's weird how that happens, how you get certain year groups where you're like, oh, this is pretty nice, and the next year's not nice, and you can do the exact same things, and you can go, oh, I'll just teach them the lessons from the year before, and they just reject it.
I remember feeling that the year group below us felt like kids. Like, they weren't... the year below us, like the year above us was the year above us.
Right.
They were the kids. And I thought it was just a year 8 to year 7 thing. Like, these guys feel like primary school students.
Yeah.
But I remember being in year 10 and they being year 9s and we're like, the kids.
Yeah, they're still doing the same thing and they're still...
And there's a few year groups now that, like, at my school the last couple of years, there's been one or two year groups that just felt young.
Yeah.
And even though they've physically gotten taller than me and they're dating and everything, they just feel young.
Yeah. So I don't know what that is. I don't know how a whole year group can be. Like, I don't know. Maybe because your year group was so positive.
I mean, we were all traumatized.
The reflective thing was all negative. They were like super negative, and you were like, "Why?" Last year, I had to get very quickly. Go, all right. I can't keep comparing this group to last year's.
Yeah, you can't have the same expectations
because that's not going to be a fun year for them or me if I keep saying, you know, last year's year 10. They blah blah blah. I never had these issues, but that's not helpful for anyone, is it?
Yeah.
So going through school with your twin brother, did you say you were a glass sibling? Is that the phrase you use? I've never heard
it's
that before.
It's a psychological term that I was introduced to fairly recently for basically either a child with a invisible illness. It's sort of like the redheaded stepchild sort of thing, or it's the non-ill or non-visibly ill sibling of a severely disabled child or a visibly disabled child.
Right.
And so I have a chronic illness that's quite severe, and that's gotten worse as I've gotten older, but it wasn't a big deal in my life when I was a kid. My brother and I were both 3 months primary, so there's health complications that come from that.
Yeah.
And then when I was diagnosed with my immune condition, I actually was recommended to go to therapy about that, which was like other things in my life prompted me to go to therapy too. But... my therapist was talking about me being a glass child as if I already knew what that word meant.
Right,
I was like, you need to rephrase that a little bit. And she explained it that it is just the kid that's see-through, or their issues are transparent.
Yeah.
Or you look through them and you see the kid that needs more help.
I would suggest that you sort of manifested that in the real world.
Yeah.
Right? And I think... we could see that. Certainly I could see that pretty early on when you were in year 7. Was like, here is someone who feels see-through, or maybe sometimes uses that for advantage.
Oh, yeah. Amber's so mature, she doesn't need help, so she's going to go fuck off in the library.
Yeah, that's right. Oh, you know, let Amber. Amber's fine. She's...
Yeah.
Who are we going to get to do this? Yeah, that's right. Like you said before, where you were like, we need to film something. We're going to film it in the cafe. Can we go to the cafe and film it? Of course you can. What a great idea.
Middle of the school day, go for a 2K walk down to the cafe.
Yeah.
It's fine.
Film it and have a nice lunch. And
who wants the day off school to go to the Lifeline Book Fair with their SOS teacher to go buy a bunch of books?
Yeah.
Do we need to call a parent? No. Her mum's going to be fine with it.
Yeah. Yeah, don't bother Vicky. She's
got work to
do. She's got things on. Yeah, God, that's a good excursion. I'm doing that again this year. Let's just go to the Lifeline Book Fair with money.
I love that. I want to do that.
Yeah.
This year I did the Canberra show.
Mm-hmm.
And it was really to go make the kids look at my artworks that I'd put in and won prizes for. Right. And I was cool. This is what your teacher is qualified to do.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Right. So, yeah, I wonder, if you're the glass sibling, what is it like when people see you? Or what was it like?
Oh, they didn't see the real me.
No.
Well, I custom made a personality for everyone I interacted with.
Oh, that's very interesting.
Yeah.
So what age did you think you were doing that?
As long as I can remember. I remember going okay, I'm going to the shops with Dad today. Dad needs me to do this sort of thing. Or I'm hanging out with my gymnastics friends.
Yeah.
So the gymnastic girls all act this way, so I act this way.
Okay.
And I'm hanging out with the boys in Scouts today, and I'm going to Scouts, and the Scouts need to act like this. And it started off just being just trying to, in my head, organize people's names. But then it was, this is what I've told people about my life.
Mm-hmm.
So they only know this much about me.
Right.
And this is what I've told.
Was that difficult to manage in the brain?
Yes.
What have I said? And did you have notes?
No. I would just fucking hoped for the best. No, I didn't. I think I actually started a diary at one point. And wow. I do a lot of lists as an anxiety technique.
Mm-hmm.
And I had a list of these are the personal facts I've told.
This would be amazing to read.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
And so it wasn't I told lies or I had secrets, but I was very selective about what I told certain people.
Mm-hmm.
And that was just either to make things easier in my life or to get around doing other things, to play up being a glass child to a degree. Sometimes I'd be these are the really responsible things I've done in my life resume to certain teachers that I knew would be more likely to let me do whatever I wanted.
Yeah.
And I remember in primary school, there was this one teacher that very obviously pitied me and took every opportunity to be like, are you stressed right now? Is something stressing you out? Do you want to go to the library? Right. So I started throwing tantrums when I knew he'd be nearby. So he would always take me out of class and I would go get a couple of hours of reading time.
That sounds pretty good.
Yeah, and
keep that quiet. Great. If my youngest hears about this, she'll be throwing tantrums all the time.
Oh, yeah. So it's playing the system to a degree. And I did that for a long time, except when I went into high school, I didn't have the background of who everyone in the school was. So I didn't know who to play off. So I had to start from scratch, which was... I remember being infuriated, going none of this is working. I can't get everyone to let me do what I want. I have to go to class and attend class.
Yeah, I think that's the thing, right? Is you have to build that up. Mm. You have to show that responsible Amber side. And then, I don't know.
It didn't take too long. After I was going to say, pretty soon. An inbuilt LSA.
I'm pretty sure pretty soon you were what's Amber doing? She's helping them. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think there was a period of, I timed it at one point. I went 5 or 6 math classes in a row before I actually had to go to math class.
Right.
And by that point, we'd skipped all through one section of algebra.
Yes,
I just was always busy helping other teachers.
I have a student now who is in crisis, the same line, the same. And so it didn't take very long to be is it line B? Yeah.
Oh, when kids
you've got 2 minutes and then back to class. But I needed, no, I don't, not why you're seemingly never going to SOS.
I have kids come up to me now and it's I know exactly what you're doing. Yeah. I invented this.
Yeah, yeah.
And the place that you're trying to hide right now, the art room, that's where I would hide too, but there's no couch to nap on anymore.
That's right. So... there used to be a couch. Amber was often found on the couch with a cup of tea.
Yeah. Read a book.
There was always a group of
teachers I'd help mark with. I'd mark essays for the art teacher for a little while.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know you could get students to help mark.
I think it's ethically frowned upon.
Oh, absolutely. But maybe I could.
Yep.
I didn't know that. That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
So when you're going through all that stage and then you become, then you go through uni and you become a teacher and you have to get up in front of people and you have a persona clearly for art teacher or English teacher,
mm-hmm.
what, I guess the question is, how do you try and get that persona as close to the real you as possible or as far away from that?
I've made a point since I've become a teacher of trying to be authentic.
Yeah.
And a lot of that is being transparent with my students when they're going through something I myself have gone through.
Mm-hmm.
But also just in teaching. Because I remember there would be some teachers when I was young going like, there's no way they could understand what I'm going through.
Yeah, or, absolutely.
And I would just play them or I'd condescend to grown adults around my life, which teenagers do normally.
They do that, yes.
You
don't understand. You don't feel our feelings. You don't
live
our
lives. Yeah, you were never 16 mm-hmm. and going through a breakup or anything like that.
Nope.
But there was a few teachers that I would talk to that even if they weren't verbally saying, like, I know what you're going through, it wouldn't feel like pity. Like, I was always very defensive and everything felt like pity if I was getting something special. So that's why I felt okay jumping around the system a little bit. But there was a few people that I remember would be empathetic. And even if they weren't, like, agreeing or saying the same thing, I remember thinking, okay, this is better. I can be my normal self. And I would unmask.
Right.
So as an adult now, I try my best when talking to kids going through crisis, going like, yeah, I was in the same position. And it's also actually really helpful being in the same school I went to.
Yeah.
To be like, yeah, who doesn't cry in the spare room?
Here's some spare places that you can cry in.
This is the best spot if you're trying to hide. No, but like being able to go to the kids and be like, look, 10 years ago, I was in year 10 also trying to figure out what I was going to do for college while my dad was being a shitty person in the background.
Yeah.
You are currently crying in the bathroom about your shitty dad dealing with going to college next year. Can I help at all?
Yeah.
And it even just knowing that there's someone else that has actually gone through that is really beneficial to the kids.
Yeah.
But that also grounds me and makes me less likely to try to shirk things. And that's something I've been working on for the past few years, is to not try to be a different person.
Yes.
And that it's quite natural to be slightly mirrored to whatever friendship group you're around. So it's not a bad thing. But also, if that's all that you do, there's like no way to stop it. I feel like that's when it's getting a bit out of hand.
So how did you stop it? Like, if that's what you were very good at from an early age.
I wrote another list, and that list was the base truth that I was going to be for any situation I was in.
Huh.
So it's like I set
a goal. Wow, that's intense.
I know. I should be diagnosed with a few more things.
Yeah.
No, but I literally, as like a New Year's resolution, I like set my base points of my identity. And I surveyed a bunch of my friends and my family. And I was like, when you think about me, what are the ways that you describe me? And previous episode, I talked about everyone describing me as bubbly and hating that. But that was a common factor, that I was bubbly socially.
Yeah.
But if I was with one or two people, if I was alone, everyone knew that I would just sit quietly and read my book or draw my drawing or paint my painting. And that was fine. So I was like, okay, I'm an ambivert. I can sort of react to whatever setting I'm in. I like trying new things. I really like art. I like reading. I have a complicated relationship with my dad. And like, these were like the cornerstones of what I knew everyone knew about me, no matter who they were around me. Like, I even asked one of my closest friends, was my manager when I worked retail at uni. And I was like, hey, what do you like about me as a person that you adopted me from a work setting to a friend setting when I left that job? And she was like, oh, you know a lot about like different events around Canberra. So you're always up to try new things. You really like art and you like sharing art with other people. You don't like when people call you bubbly. I was like, yep.
Yep.
So I had a few things that I knew were like the things that I had communicated to everyone, regardless of if that was by choice. And I just focused on those things. So even though I was still like a bit curated about what I told students, and part of that is like adult relationship versus adult
also
child.
Also, it's protective as well. Yeah. You don't need them.
Yeah, I don't need them knowing all my personal life.
No.
But I was like, these are the home truths that anyone can know about me, and it hasn't done me any damage.
Yes.
So that's just what I focused on sharing.
That's probably a great way to put it, right? Is a lot of students that we see, that's what they're hesitant about or afraid of, is if I show them, like you said, these base truths.
Yeah.
Then it will make me vulnerable and they can attack it. It's only over time where you realize, oh no, there are a lot of people who know this about me and they haven't used it to attack me.
And that's the scariest part of being a teenager, is you have no scope of what to do if someone isn't liking you.
Yeah.
As an adult, there's been at least two people in your life that didn't like you.
Yeah, yeah.
And you didn't die from those things.
That's right.
But as a teenager, your friends are your whole life.
Yeah, and also in the school environment, yeah, if two people don't like me, what if they tell up all the other people?
Yeah. There's only 100 people I can piss off in 4 years. I'm going to run out of people.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's something as well that is so much easier as an adult dealing with these teenagers. Because kids, if they like a teacher, they want to befriend you.
Yes.
So you got to be clear with that boundary. But also, they need to see people making mistakes. Yeah. And I can be the person in their life that makes the dumb social mistake. It doesn't hurt me.
Yeah.
Kids tell me I have a bad haircut. I don't really care that much.
Yeah.
It's my haircut. You don't have to like it.
It is interesting. They're very happy to tell you on a very specific level.
But if you tell them haircuts, that their earring is wonky, they will cry.
That's right.
But they just told me that I have mascara smudge around my eye and I look like I haven't slept in 3 days. But that's fine.
If you say, oh, my nephew's got the same drinking bottle, you'll say I'm a child. Yes, it's all of that stuff. It's protective. I think so much of growing up is realizing how much doesn't kill you.
Yeah.
Because it seems so massive.
And there's a lot of stuff that seems so relevant to every conversation when you're a kid. Like, I really like the movie Cars.
It's always cars. Why is it cars? Yeah.
But that's irrelevant to every relationship you have.
Yes.
Like, there's so many things that people focus on that isn't the important part.
Right.
You don't have to communicate everything to your friends. You don't have to tell them every thought on your head.
Yes. Yes.
And then sort through every thought on your head to tell them the relevant stuff to them. Like, it's just sometimes you can just exist and you don't have to be
that takes time, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Because so many of them are like, I want to have best friends so quickly. So I'm going to tell you all of my vulnerabilities. And then you just told them I told you not to tell anyone and you told other people.
You trauma dumped to build a friendship, but that friendship is not based on any sort of mutual qualities. So if you get bored of them or they get bored of you, it's the biggest insult ever because they know your deepest darkest
secret. Or if they've told other people what you told them, then again, that's a betrayal, the deepest betrayal, and you'll never get over it. Mm. And it's over and it's ruined
and if you
forever.
Tell them at recess time, but they're hanging out with their friend from yesterday at lunchtime, they're not a real friend.
They're not even worth... No, and then the next day it's fine. Yes, it is so difficult because you can't. I mean, that's where teachers get themselves into trouble is by just saying, "Oh, just get over it."
Mm.
You know, like whatever, it'll be fine. Like that's not an answer for 12-year-old people. It will be fine.
Mm.
How do you know? What if it's not?
They don't have the scope for that.
What if it's not? You're like, well, I don't know.
Then it's not.
But it will be. Yes, it will be. Yeah. But it's a lot. So much of it is. You know, I had a year seven student who said to me, like, well, how do I be happy like you? I'm like 45 years old. Do you think I was like this when I was 12? And they were like, yep. Like, oh, okay. That's where
just
grew
from an egg.
You
that
just
way.
Think, yep, who these people are. That's what they were like at 12. And so you just seem like you're happy with who you are. I'm like, yeah, I know, but I'm 45 and not all the time and not every day, but like why?
You see a version of me that comes to my day of job.
Yeah,
my day of job,
yeah.
My work every day.
I might call the episode my day of job. Yeah.
Like you see the version of me that comes to work every day and gets paid to be there and theoretically does something that they enjoy doing, even if it's not necessarily with you as a person.
Yeah.
You don't see me on weekends. You don't see me after I've been talking for 6 hours straight, sitting in my car, listening to music.
Yeah.
Like,
you don't see me come home and my children come to ask me something and me say, can you just leave me alone? And they're like, oh, why is he such a tool? Because you've just, like you said, had 6 hours of talking and helping and assisting. And they don't see it. They just go, oh, you are the person in front of me. You've always been like that. Everything's the same. My
and
life,
it's still
who I
out
am
of the
now.
Blue when you have a bitch moment and you yell at the kid that's been talking nonstop for an hour and a half.
Yeah. And the reverse of that is who I am now at 12 is who I'm going to be at 45.
Yeah.
Like that's the hard thing.
I'm a solid person at 12 years old.
That's right. And I'm always going to feel this way. Incidentally, what I found this year with students, which was hilarious, is when they asked me how old I was and I told them, they went, okay.
When I told them what year I was born, it broke their brains.
Oh, yeah. It breaks my brain that these kids are like 2000 and...
Yes.
And it's like the 2010s
yeah,
now.
Yeah.
Which is horrific. They're
like, when's your birth? 2012? Oh.
I thought you were supposed to be 2 years old.
2011? What? I mean, the fact that my youngest is the same age as the year sevens I'm teaching, I forget all the time. Mm. I'm like, oh, they're... Oh, yeah, that's why, because they're the same, exactly the same age. That's weird. Oh, but then she's in year seven. That's not weird, but... Yeah,
do you ever have like the same conversations with the child and then with your own child?
A lot of times it's the same phrases, it's the same context. What's really helpful is like the references I can throw in about the... So you start off teaching and your references with the students are close,
mm.
and then they move further and further apart and you're like, I don't know any of these references. And then you start having children and the references catch back up.
Yeah.
So now, especially with the year sevens I teach... The references to TV shows, I'm like, I'm all over this. Like, what about that? Like, oh my God, I forgot about... Oh, yeah.
He knows the secret language.
I know all these secret languages. And like, why are your memes all about Diary of a Wimpy Kid and Alvin and the Chipmunks movies? I thought these were in my past. Why are you in Year 7 still making memes about all these things? And they're like, oh, it's funny. Oh, God.
I guess.
I thought I was over it. But no, these things, especially in high school, they love a good... Let's be nostalgic when we're 12 years old.
It's so circular.
And they start saying...
It's because their age, they're old souls at 12.
Yeah.
More so than at 14, I think.
Yeah, and they also say things like, I wish, you know... Remember when you could just watch Daniel Tiger's Neighbourhood? Oh, yeah, just watch that. That was nice. You're like, yep. But nope.
A bunch of my year nines are getting their first jobs and they're like, oh, remember when on the school holidays we could just go for bike rides all day?
Yeah. Like, did you go for bike rides all day? No. Nah.
Nope. Did you actually go fishing?
No.
So maybe McDonald's shift where you get $60 at the end of the day is a good thing.
Is a better thing than, yeah, this fantasy thing that you never did. All this freedom. Yeah, it's weird seeing that development. Because it's so, like, it keeps going. That's the other part. It's like you just sort of move them along the conveyor belt sometimes and the new year sevens turn up and the year tens drop off and then the next ones come along. But anyway, I've written down a few things because I listened to your previous episode and I wanted just to go over. I had written here, bubbly. But you've answered that part. I wanted just to ask you about, are you still making a cult?
Yes, I am. I'm very proud of my cult. I won the award last year of teacher most likely to have a cult.
Yep.
It's my year 10 award. or teacher most likely to be in a cult, which I took... slightly offended by because I would be the run running
right.
it
yes,
obviously
right.
But I think what I found, my current year 10s,
yep,
I had them when they were year 7, so this is my first group that's gone all the way
through.
Because I had them for a term at the tail end of COVID when I first graduated and had my permit to teach, so I've had them all 4 years and they're very used to me as a person now and how I do things. So when I throw orders at them, they will follow them. Some of the children.
Yep.
But I have like a group of kids that specifically come at recess time because they know I'll send them to do the recycling.
Right.
And I can just like snap my fingers and call on. There's another group of kids that I know will always want to color in a year 7 mock-up of an artwork. Like if I'm making content for my year 7s,
yep,
I know there's a couple year 10s that will always love to do that busy work for that.
Right.
So I've slowly got my collective of helpers.
Yep.
Which... all the kids that at some point experienced the same stuff I experienced as a teenager. And yeah, I have talked to them about that. And I go, look, I'm not going to let you skiv off class. But if you have finished everything, and I know for a fact you've finished everything, I've talked to your teacher, and this is actually a quiet period.
Yeah.
Sure, 5 minutes, you can come clean the sinks in the art room. And I get the benefit of help.
Yeah.
They're feeling seen and heard and having that quiet space. But it's actually productive. It's not just wasting time.
So do you...
Which is not amazingly ethical. But
I was
going to
say, but do you... let them do the things that you used to do, like have like skip maths for 8 lessons in a row or whatever.
No.
It is right.
I have a system in place.
Right.
They get one free wine where they can come up to me in the middle.
Free wine.
Yeah.
All right. Amber's giving free wine to students. Yes, right.
No,
a free wine.
Free,
I got you.
Bitch sesh.
Yeah.
I can't say bitch sesh to the children because I'm trying to be an adult here.
I got you. Yeah.
Where if they've skipped class, they get 10 minutes if they've come to the door and I'm not actively teaching, where they can complain at me before I walk them back to class and they have to spend the rest of the period in class.
Yeah.
Or I walk them to wellbeing and they have to stay in wellbeing. If they come back to me at any point, they're not allowed to see me for a week. unless it's right. class.
That's effective boundaries. That's good.
Because a lot of these kids, I struggled last year with those boundaries. A lot of these kids either see me as like a big sister figure because I'm not too much older than them, or they see me as an easy out.
Yeah.
Because I will let them talk to me and I do care about their well-being and don't want them to kill themselves and all that jazz.
Yeah.
But it was such a drain on my mental health of always having to be on and ready to help these kids when it's not part of my job as a teacher.
No.
Like, you'll always be a couple of kids' special teacher that they'll disclose information to. Yeah. But I had over 100 kids that would regularly shop around for teachers. And it wasn't always me, but about 100 kids that would come to art club, that would come to queer club, that would just show up at my office. There was solidly about 20 of them that I'd see at least once a day, every day.
Yeah.
And I just had no spare time. All my periods off was chasing up their issues. Recess and lunch, they were crying in my classroom. There was a system in place across the two staff rooms I was working at where, depending on how sad the kid looked, they would just say I was in a meeting.
Right.
I moved my desk so I wasn't within view of the door, so that if someone knocked on the door and they were asking for me, I could opt out of being present without having to hide under my desk.
Hmm.
And then I realized, I'm 24 years old. I'm not hiding under my desk from a 12-year-old who's sad. Like, that's not how this is going to work. There are people whose jobs it is to do this.
Yeah.
If they're choosing not to go to them, I'm going to honor that choice, but I'm still going to make them follow the process.
Mm.
So they can whine at me for 10 minutes. They can have a chat if they just need to calm down.
Yeah.
But then I'm taking them to the person whose job it is. So that's only me giving up 10 minutes of my time and not an hour planning period that I could be spending doing my actual job. So I don't want them to be alienated, but I also want them to know that I know the ruse that they're going through. If they broke up with someone 2 weeks ago, they're not still trying to get out of a class that they don't share with that person
right
this very second, unless something new has happened. So they get that 10 minutes to explain if this is new information or is something they need help with right this very second and something I couldn't possibly chase up at lunchtime. And if it is something that's actually horrible that they need help with, I will sit with them in well-being.
Yeah.
But I make it clear that I'm not the person handling this.
Yeah.
I can be here to be your support within reason, but it's not part of my scope of my job.
Yeah. You have to start... from their point of view, you have to be colder to them. It's not from your point of view. It's professional and it's for your own well-being. But from their point of view, it's like, oh, like, why are they...
And it was especially...
not giving me the time, but I had to do the same thing, especially with your year group. Like, when you're your year group, the students that were in year eight, like, well, that was good. I haven't done any work today because I've been counselling students.
Six people have been crying.
Yeah, and then the next day, it's a different six people who have been bullied by the six people yesterday that I spoke to.
Yeah, like, and I bolstered them to go stand up for themselves.
That's right. That's who were like, I'm being excluded, and then tomorrow I will exclude others. That's where you got out of the discussion. So that is difficult, right?
It was especially hard to do with my year 10s because I've had them. They've only ever known me in the school as a support person. Like from year 7, I was desperate for attention from the children.
Yeah,
I wanted
of course.
To be loved and approved of as a new educator.
I am a good person.
Yeah.
Recognize
and I'm here
this.
To help them.
Mm-hmm.
So as they matured a little bit, it actually did become easier for me to set those boundaries because by year 10, they don't need the same social support as they did in year 7.
Yeah.
And I don't know if it's an amazing thing, but I've been really happy to see a lot of my year 10s in the social settings of like art club or even in the hallways. They know they're not the only ones that come to me for help.
Yeah.
Year 7s, year 8s get pissy when they have to share their favorite teacher.
Yeah.
But when they see
they're just like,
the year 10...
They're just like, you gave...
Yeah.
They wore your jumper. Like that, you know? It's the same thing over and over
I'm
again. They sit there watching you like you are with your brother. Like when you're in year 9, that's what they're like. Like, oh my God, that teacher, that person's...
Yeah.
Like,
it's but the kids that decided they were in my cult are the ones that are now in 9, 10 that have been with me that whole time that I actually sat down and I spoke to a few of them. I was like, hey, you guys know that I... went through a lot of the stuff you're going through in high school. You guys know that I struggled a lot. That still affects me now.
Mm.
And I'm finding that the more I help you, the less I have for myself. And being open and honest with those kids, and it was only a select few out of the ones that would come to me regularly, meant that they would help in a way. Not that they were taking on a role, and I wouldn't want them to take on any sort of role that took them out of their comfort zone and was too mature for their age group.
Yeah.
But if I went, hey, I don't have the time or the capacity to help you right now. I know you're crying. Go to Miss Spink.
Yeah.
Who is your coordinator, or go to well-being, and I will come catch you at recess.
Yeah.
They took that on a lot easier than a year 7 that's in tears. I'd be like, look, I'm busy right now. I love and respect you. I don't have time for you. Year sevens would continue crying and then I'm suddenly the bitch.
Yeah.
And then they'd never come to me again for help. And that was one less safety teacher for them.
Hmm.
Which is not necessarily my responsibility.
No, but it's a tricky thing, right?
It's that balance you need to find.
Yeah.
So the kids that have decided they're in my cult are almost the ones that are the more mature in that situation where they know, oh, she will come check in on me. And we have like a business relation.
Yeah.
Which is really funny because they have Pinterest boards of outfits they think I'll wear. And there's merch. I found out someone has a sticker printer and they've made stickers of me.
Yeah.
That I see on several laptops. And they're usually the kids that will have like appointments booked with me. They are like, hey, I'm having a rough time. Can I come to you at recess and we'll have a cup of tea? And I'm like, sure, recess. Come find me in the art room.
Yeah.
And we've booked an appointment. That's within everyone's scope.
Yeah.
And that's my cult.
Yeah. There's a lot of times with students where you're like, you need to come and see me at recess. You didn't. You came to see me during class time.
Yeah. So now you don't get the fun version of me.
That's right. No, that's not going to happen. Let's go back to class. But I knew you could have seen me at recess. Yeah, but I was...
Yeah, I set aside my time for you.
You were having fun with your friends. You don't get to turn that off. Like, oh no, it's my fun time. Now I'm in class and I'm sad.
Yeah.
That's not usually how it goes. Often it is, but you know, you can be sad in class. All right.
Weirdly enough, a few kids actually take that on when you pointed out. You're only sad now that you have to do stuff.
That's right.
And you are correct.
Now it works. So this year you'll get the lovely experience of saying goodbye to a year group that you've gone through year 7 to 10. It's always a very nice time to like
and I'm going get to them sob. Nice
things. You're going to sob?
I already know.
Oh, really?
I cried thinking about it the other day and I was like, this is weird. I don't like this.
I know with your year group, I was already sad from... I was sad from watching the end of the year group before you at their farewell assembly.
I sat at the graduation last year and I was like, oh god, the kids I actually know really well are going to be here in a year's time.
That's exactly what it was like with your year group. It was like watching that year before you, their graduation assembly, and going, oh, that's going to be sad. That sucks. And already thinking about it, which it was, of course. And then I just sort of made it like, all right, well, what if I'm not sad? What if I'm making my mission to make all of you sad? That was my mission.
Oh, I'm doing that too.
Yeah.
I'm making them guilty. I'm like, you're going to leave me and you're going to go off to another school and find new favorite teachers. And you'll,
that's right. Will still be you'll here. Turn up in term one of year 11. They'll turn up to talk to you and you'll be too busy because you'll be in class.
Yep.
Some of them will come and say, can I sit in your class? Which happened, your year group. Certain students would come back and then just sit in a year 8 English class. Why they did that, I don't know.
Not at all.
And then after the first term, they're like, oh, we've moved on. It happens very quickly. They're like, oh, this is much better.
I've got a couple kids from last year that like friended me on Facebook that I did deny. But a few of them I've then seen in like the market circuit selling ceramics. And that's nice to check in.
Yeah.
The ones that have come back to school are very demanding.
Yes.
Which I don't like that much.
No. But they tend to, like I said, by term 2, they don't tend to come back.
It's all fizzled out.
Because the transition is that first term is always hard, and they think, oh, I miss it, was so much better, and then they realize, no, it's not.
Yeah.
This is nicer.
They just build a new connection.
It's less intense, and oh, this is actually better, and then they stop coming, and then you're like, no, all right, well,
moving on.
The same. Like I said, just the next year it'll be the same thing, but you'll have that. It's a lovely experience to watch them leave and be like, goodbye.
Something that I think is already going to help, which could also be a hindrance. I've had the same PC group for the majority of the time I've been at Kaylin with the same group of kids. But this year, because I'm a new educator, we've switched things up and I share a different PC group with another teacher. So it's all still kids I already knew, but it's not my kids.
Yeah.
And I think that's already helped some of the kids that needed a bit more of that connection or thought they did to step back a little bit.
Right.
I still check in with all the kids that need check-ins. And there's a few that I knew were hesitant to come to me, but still needed that check-in. That aren't as close with their new PC teacher. So I seek them out when I'm on like recess duty and go have a check-in.
Yeah.
But already because that connection was broken to a degree, they don't physically have me every morning.
Yeah.
It's been easier to have that separation for both of us, which has been really lovely because now we're seeing each other and it's a bit calmer.
Yeah.
I'm not only seeing them when they're in crisis, I'm seeing them when they want to come socialize as well and have a hangout or play a game and stuff like that, which has been really good, which I think will help them going into year 11, but I don't think that would work for everyone. Like it's only working for this group of kids because they're already on the right track.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's the thing you've got to manage, right? Is what, I don't know. That's part of the job. It's like, what do students need today? Not what do they need all the time?
This very second.
This very second. All right. Well, I'm going to let you go because we've been chatting for ages. I'm very interested to hear how the rest of your year goes with all your with the year 10s, especially as we get to the end of the year and you have to say goodbye to a connected year group. It's very nice and very sad.
Yep.
But that's it.
Cool.
Thank you.